9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring today. Robert Half is here to help. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
The U.S. Justice Department has released the findings of a civil rights investigation into the Minneapolis Police Department, launched after the 2020 murder of George Floyd.
We found that MPD unlawfully discriminates against Black and Native American people in its enforcement activities, including the use of force following stops. Based on our review of the data, MPD officers stop, search, and then use force against people who are Black and Native American at disproportionate rates.
Plus, Russian President Vladimir Putin promotes Russia's economy and hints again at using nuclear weapons. And EV startup Rivian tries a new sales tactic. It's Friday, June 16th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. The U.S. Justice Department has released the findings of a sweeping civil rights investigation into the Minneapolis police, finding the department routinely discriminates and uses excessive force against residents. The findings cap a multi-year investigation launched after the 2020 murder of George Floyd, which sparked nationwide protests over racial injustice and policing. Video footage at the time showed former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin pressing his knee on Floyd's neck for around 9 minutes as Floyd, who was Black, cried out that he couldn't breathe. Chauvin, who is white, was convicted of second-degree murder in state court. The DOJ's investigation found that officers in the Minneapolis Police Department engage in abusive conduct, like the kind that led to Floyd's murder. Attorney General Merrick Garland.
We observed many MPD officers who did their difficult work with professionalism, courage, and respect. But the patterns and practices we observed made what happened to George Floyd possible. As one city leader told us, quote, "These systemic issues didn't just occur on May 25th, 2020. There were instances like that that were being reported by the community long before that."
Here now to discuss this report and what happens next is Wall Street Journal Justice Department reporter Sadie Gurman. Welcome back, Sadie.
Thank you for having me.
Sadie, this was a really scathing indictment of the department. And as we heard, Attorney General Garland had indicated there were patterns and practices that the DOJ found that made what happened to George Floyd possible. What are some of the specific problems identified in this report?
Well, the main issues seem to be that officers in Minneapolis often use excessive force against people, including deadly force, who do not pose a threat. In some cases, people who are already restrained. And I thought it was particularly interesting that this report said that after Floyd's killing in May 2020, the police department banned the use of chokeholds and neck restraints, like the one that was used against him. But officers continued to do that, the Justice Department found, and found that the training on that policy was not unrolled for at least a year. So it kind of allowed these dangerous practices to continue. I thought that that was an interesting aspect of it. But Garland also pointed to discrimination against Black people and Native Americans in terms of traffic stops and searches. They were far more likely to stop people of color compared to white people doing the same thing. They patrol neighborhoods differently based on the racial makeup of those neighborhoods, and that has led to some pretty unconstitutional policing throughout the department that city officials are just now beginning to rectify.
You mentioned some changes the Minneapolis Police Department has made. What else has changed since the death of George Floyd in 2020?
Well, the killing changed, prompted a lot of changes within the city government and its police department. This is an agency that's long had a troubled relationship with the Black community, and George Floyd's killing was just one of several that have shaken the area in recent years. But this particular death caused turmoil within the department. Hundreds of officers quit, and the agency is continuing to struggle to replace them. Activists and city council moved to disband the police department, but that move was ultimately scrapped because voters rejected a measure that would have replaced it with some sort of public health focused department of safety. Conversations about crime have changed since 2020. And so what we're sort of seeing is a police department that's been trapped in the middle of a lot of different political crosshairs, as well as a spike in violent crime.
What was the police department's response to the DOJ's report?
Well, the city's police chief, Brian O'Hara, is somebody who's been through a consent decree before when he worked at the city of Newark, New Jersey. So he is used to this kind of transformational process, and he seemed to welcome it. He said, you know, that the department would be transparent in providing an ongoing assessment of its progress toward making these fixes. But, you know, he acknowledged that change is hard, that it is hard to change the fundamental culture of a police department that has been, you know, trained and doing these same things for so long. But, you know, he seemed to suggest that they were on the right track and that they were committed to making these reforms. Now, I'm sure that these findings would be viewed differently by certain rank and file officers, people who are on the street, people who feel like they are being falsely blamed for behavior that they, you know, that they did not take part in. So it just, I think it kind of hits differently throughout the department, but certainly city leadership seems committed to making these changes.
Sadie, you mentioned a consent decree, which is something we have seen in other cities. Can you explain what that is and what it could mean for the Minneapolis PD if they reach a negotiation with the DOJ where they agree to that?
So Garland said that city officials have already begun entering into what is known as a consent decree. That's basically a court enforceable settlement that forces a city to make certain prescribed changes and work alongside the Justice Department to make those changes. And then that progress is overseen by what is known as an independent monitor. It's somebody who's appointed by the court to track the progress and make sure that the city is on target to meet the remedies that were outlined in the Justice Department's report. These can be pretty costly reforms, and the Trump administration had said that it was not the role of the federal government to impose such strict conditions on municipalities. What we've seen from the Biden administration, however, is that the Justice Department has seemed to be launching a number of these pattern or practice investigations, which often end in consent decrees. Justice Department officials under this administration view that as a powerful tool to create lasting change, as they underscored today. And, you know, it's a different approach, but one that is designed to engender trust within the community.
Wall Street Journal Justice Department reporter Sadie Gurman. Sadie, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
Coming up, electric vehicle startup Rivian tries selling trucks the old-fashioned way, on the lot. We'll have more on its new sales tactic after the break.
The Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin. Investment professionals reveal their best mentors, how they find their next great idea, and a few funny stories. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
Electric vehicle startup Rivian is trying a new sales tactic, inviting buyers to shop in person at its factory parking lot in Normal, Illinois. Sean McLean covers EV startups for the Wall Street Journal, and he joins me now to explain. Sean, why is Rivian doing this?
Well, Rivian's finding itself in an unusual position about a year and 9 months after starting production, where they have some unsold vehicles sitting around on the factory lot, and they're thinking of ways to find customers.
What does this tell us about the health of the business?
Well, look, up until now, the biggest question for Rivian from investors, analysts, has been whether or not they could produce enough vehicles. We haven't really faced the question of, are there enough buyers for Rivian vehicles? And so the fact that they have excess inventory now speaks to sort of an overall slowing in the industry, but also raises questions about, does Rivian have enough demand for $80,000 to $90,000 pickup trucks?
How does this compare to what we're seeing other EV manufacturers doing right now?
Well, we haven't seen anybody in the industry try what Rivian is doing, which is the automotive equivalent of a yard sale. Most car companies don't have to deal with this because they simply wholesale all of their vehicles to their dealer networks. But EV startups like Rivian chose not to use dealerships and they sell everything online. So they don't have physical retail outlets where people can go out and buy vehicles off the lot. This is the first time we're seeing a young car company try something like this. The auto industry as a whole is in a weird spot in that we've been through several years of vehicle shortages where every car maker was selling everything they could possibly produce. That's changing. However, you talk to dealerships around the country and their biggest complaint is we need more EVs. So it's not that there is an oversupply of EVs in the market, there is more supply, which just means that car makers are finding themselves in an unfamiliar situation, which is they actually have to go out and sell these cars again. And Rivian, having never been in this position before, like many young companies that came out in the past 2 years, they're having to do this for the first time. So they're experimenting. And this event on Saturday with the physical sales event is one such experiment.
What will that look like for consumers, a EV yard sale?
The way it's been told to me is that people who wish to drive out to Normal, Illinois, which is where Rivian has its factory, will pull up in front of the facility, and there will be a parking lot over to the right. Well, there'll be a few dozen Rivian pickup trucks there for them to browse in a bunch of colors and interior options. And if they like one, they can purchase it and drive it home. And that will be the fastest time that anybody has been able to get a Rivian till date. Usually you have to wait at least a couple weeks to get your vehicle.
That's Wall Street Journal reporter Sean McClain. In other news, Russian President Vladimir Putin talked up Moscow's success in resisting the West's sanctions and made a point of offering more trading opportunities for countries across Asia and Africa during a speech at the widely watched St. Petersburg International Economic Forum. The Russian president hinted again at using nuclear weapons, saying that while Moscow had no intention of using them at this time, it would do so if Russia's security was threatened. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said there are no indications Russia is preparing to use nuclear weapons and that the U.S. will continue to monitor the situation. In U.S. news, a Pittsburgh jury has found Robert Bowers guilty of killing 11 people at the Tree of Life Synagogue in 2018 in the deadliest anti-Semitic attack on U.S. soil. During the trial, jurors recounted the attack in graphic detail, and Bowers' attorneys acknowledged he was the shooter. The same jury will now hear further evidence to determine whether Bowers should receive the death penalty. And a new study found that testosterone replacement therapy doesn't increase the risk of heart attack, stroke, or death from cardiovascular issues when administered properly. But the authors of the study, published in the New England Journal of Medicine and funded by drug makers led by AbbVie, did find other cardiovascular risks and caution that the results don't apply to everyone who takes testosterone. Prescriptions for testosterone products have been rising in the U.S. The Food and Drug Administration requires manufacturers to label the products as presenting a risk of blood clots and increasing the risk of heart attacks and strokes. A few studies and an agency advisory group concluded in 2014 that the treatment may raise the risk of major cardiovascular events. And finally, helicopter parenting is making its way into the workplace. Recruiters and hiring managers say they're seeing more parents getting involved in their children's professional lives. Work culture reporter Taping Chen says the examples are pretty wide-ranging.
Everything from applying for jobs for their kids to hand-holding throughout the application process, including going so far as to show up for interviews with them. One of the stories that really struck me was talking to an HR manager who got a phone call from a mother of a teenage lifeguard who was really insistent that her son needed to make more money and had a little bit of a confrontation over the phone with his employer saying, this can't be right. He deserves to make more. He's been working here for so much time, etc. He had gotten a 10% raise and the mother felt like he deserved more.
And Taping says the pandemic may have contributed to this uptick in parental over-involvement since it deprived young would-be professionals of valuable experience.
Something that a number of the hiring managers I spoke to were observing was, look, especially for really early career professionals, this was a time when for many youth, it was hard to have opportunities to learn how to engage with the outside world. And for a lot of kids and teenagers, life was sort of on pause.
But parental interventions may backfire, so it may be best to let the young and ambitious figure things out on their own. After all, as one professional in human resources told Taping, they're going to have to do it all their life. And that's what's news for this week. Our hosts are me, Anne-Marie Fertoli, and Luke Vargas. Keith Collins filled in for Luke on Monday and Tuesday. The show was produced by Pierre Bien-Aimé and Kate Bullivant, with help from Mohsen Ali, Anthony Bansi, Julie Chang, Jayla Everett, Zoe Thomas, and J.R. Whalen, and editorial support from Alan Haberchak, Sandra Kilhoff, Michael Kosmides, Catherine Millsop, Valana Patterson, and Chris Sinsley. If you like what you hear, please rate and review us. A quick programming note, we will be off on Monday for Juneteenth. We'll be back with a new episode on Tuesday morning.
The Claude 3 model family by Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. Haiku is lightning fast and cost-effective. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Learn more at anthropic.com/Claude.